Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kane & Rince Sound of Play 12. Sound of Play, we bring you an eclectic fortnightly compilation mix of some of our favourite pieces from the many video game soundtracks we've enjoyed over the years. Joining me, Leon Cox, in this Sound of Play, it's Joshua Garrity.
Hello there.
And Tony Atkins.
Hello.
And we've just enjoyed a request from the community there. I'm sure familiar to many, that was War's Never Been So Much Fun from Cannon Fodder, as requested by Quench Design. And he simply says, it's been lodged in my brain since school. I wasn't at school in 1993 when I first heard that, but it has been lodged in my brain ever since. That, of course, by Sensible Software's own John Hare and the late, sadly late, Richard Joseph. And I think, if all being well, you'll have heard the CD32 version there, as taken from a YouTube video, because the Amiga version has that very harshly separated stereo, more of which possibly later, depending.
I remember that version, the harsh version, although it did bring a huge smile to my face hearing it again.
Yeah, I mean, the CD32 version is almost the same. It's just slightly higher fidelity, samples and that sort of thing. And of course, on the actual disc, because it was on a CD, they did a whole, rather than just digitized still frames, it had a whole kind of
horrendous
comedy video.
The video. It's horrendous.
You think? I like it.
I think it's terrible. From today's standards, it's pretty terrible. But no, it's if devs having fun with their music, why not?
Yeah, and it was 22 years ago, and a software house mucking around in a field with army uniforms on and stuff like that. Yes, so the production values are low, but it was very much reflected the personalities of sensible software as they were then. So now over to Tony. Welcome back. And
thank you.
You've brought something very famous and epic to our table.
Yes, this track is going to be familiar to the millions upon millions upon millions of people that have experienced.
Who listened to this?
Have listened to this show whilst playing the wonderful World of Warcraft. This is an odd one, actually. The title of the track is called Legends of Azeroth by Jason Haynes.
Hayes.
He of many, many Blizzard games, but mainly, obviously, many sections of Warcraft. He does lots of both, I'd call it the incidental music of Warcraft, actually in-game music, as well as a lot of the themes. Also responsible for some stuff on StarCraft, Hearthstone, the usual, Warcraft 3. Mm. Yeah, it's very much in-house composer. But this is a very specific track, in fact. Now, it's actually the main theme music or main title music that people would recognize once they log into the game or go to log into the game. It's the music you sit as when you're thinking, okay, I'm sat waiting to join a server. Yeah, can we go yet? Can we go yet? And it's a beautiful piece. But the reason I say it's very specific is it's actually only from the original World of Warcraft. So they change every expansion they change it. So the Burning Crusade has its own login music. Then, Mr. Pandora, etc. They'd all change their login music. So this is actually, it is available. There's some tricks you can do to make it as your home music now, but every release it keeps changing. So for the people that played the game back in 2004, 2005, all the way through to 2006, before the expansion, this was the music you'd hear upon logging in. The track itself is, I just think, phenomenal. It does that wonderful job, which is to kind of take you for a tour through the entirety of the game in just 4 minutes. So at the very start, you feel like if you've played the game, you know what Ironforge sounds like. It moves from Ironforge all the way into like the Elwyn Forest and Stormwind, then moves into the deeper parts of the games. So it does a really good job of conveying everything that you're going to have on the journey. And so that has to be applauded. But it's an orchestral piece of music, really high production values if you expect from Blizzard. And yeah, it's one of those ones I played, and I'm talking in hours here, I played probably over a year of that game in hours. So it's a piece of music I heard every single time I logged onto that game, and every single time I went, yes, the journey begins, or continues in that case. So yeah, I hope you enjoy it. It's one of my all-time favourites.
So the entire World of Warcraft there, all 8,760 hours of it, if you're Tony Atkins, condensed into 4 minutes. God. Do you think was it 8 to 9,000 hours? Is that, do you think that's about
I
right?
I did once do a proper time played, and it wasn't healthy. So I don't play that game anymore, which is a shame. But there's other things I need to do in my life other than play that one game. So
what's the subscription base down to now? Is it still 7 million or something?
It's
crazy.
Still incredibly high.
They only just recently put out another add-on, I think, didn't they? Relatively recently,
last
year.
Yeah, I haven't kept up with it because it's the kind of game which, you know, once you've gone cold turkey, you probably shouldn't drink from the well again. So, yeah, I've said this before, and I'll say it again. World of Warcraft is my favorite game of all time, but it's one that sadly is I can't really go back to because after the Cataclysm, it all changed. So unless you go to some funky server somewhere that someone's done privately, you're not playing the experience I had. So probably
sure
best left in the past.
I'm sure you pick it up again. We haven't done a Kane and Rince, the main podcast on World of Warcraft. Whether we ever do or not, I don't know. But it is obviously something that
it's
we consider.
An era. Yeah, you'd have to pick.
Yeah, it's eras. A tough one to do in a lot of ways because people who didn't play it at the start have a different experience to the people who are playing it now and sort of thing. So, but maybe someday we'll find a way to satisfactorily tackle it. Joshua.
Hello. So the track I've chosen is from Ghost Trick Phantom Detective, a game we covered on issue 42 of Kane and Rince, a podcast I believe all three of us were on, along with James. The track is called Prologue, The Beginning of the Night. It was composed by Masakazu Sugimori. I chose this track because it's very different from the rest of the soundtrack. The soundtrack to Ghost Trick Phantom Detective is quite crazy and creative and very reminiscent of a lot of chiptune music, but with a bit more modern flair. Whereas this track is much slower paced. It has a much slower pace. It's much more atmospheric. It's the first track you hear in the game, and it really establishes this kind of film noir feel that the game then just ignores later on as it disappears into this crazy nonsense world. But having that kind of this track at the beginning, and also it gets repeated during in between like the different levels of the game, like it plays as it kind of does like this. This is the story so far. This is where the characters are at. It's kind of like this mood setter piece of music that just kind of establishes the kind of the film noir kind of detective story atmosphere of this game. It's really memorable, and it's one of my favorite pieces of music. I hope you enjoy it.
Prologue, the beginning of The Night by Masakazu Sugimori there. And for me, Ghost Trick Phantom Detective, I think, still contains possibly my favourite kind of surprise reveal in any game that I can think of.
Oh, God, yes.
It's an extraordinary moment, and it's one of those things where you don't want to lead people on to say play this because of the, you know, or watch this film because of the twist, because everyone's just kind of spending the whole film going, well, you know, I'm waiting for the twist, and that can ruin it. But obviously, in our main podcast, the one we did on this game, we spoil it, of course. So I do recommend that you try to find the game on DS or download it on iOS and play it first, because there are some real treats to be had.
I love elements of music, because I listen back to that track now, and that's like every part of that says this is a game of mystery. There's certain tracks that always just describe stuff that you wouldn't necessarily need to play that game, you wouldn't necessarily need to see a film based around that, but you could say yes, that track is trying to describe mystery around you. Really put together.
Absolutely. The composer is best known for many works on the Gactan Saiban reversal series, whatever it is, Turnabout Trial. Phoenix Wright, mm-hmm. to us, and I think the games share quite a bit of development DNA, which makes sense. Traditionally, for me, we have something from further back, a longer ago, and this is a tune of which there are many versions, because this was a game that was originally released in, I think, at the arcades in about 88, and was ported to many, many home systems following that, including notably the Mega Drive had a great version. Sequel came to the Super Nintendo. You can buy two versions of Super Ghouls and Ghosts on Wii U virtual console now, one GBA and one SNES. But the one I wanted to talk about is the Amiga version, not because it was a great conversion. It wasn't. It wasn't the worst Amiga coin-op conversion in the world. Software Creations did a reasonable job in some ways, but perhaps the greatest move was employing Tim Follin, the legendary Tim Follin, who we featured on Sound of Play before, to convert Tomoyo Kawamoto's tunes to the Amiga. So another one that I'm almost certainly going to bring to a Sound of Play in the future is his completely original composition for the title screen, which is a remarkable folk rock piece where he evokes the likes of Pentangle and Steel I Span. And it's this kind of folky prog hoedown, creepy bizarreness. But this tune is actually from Level 2, and the original name for the piece is The Village of Decay and Destruction. So Capcom had two kind of main composers back in the early to mid 80s when they were first making all their coin-ops, like 1942 and Sun Sun and Pirate Ship Higamar and all the games that you've seen on those retro compilations, basically. So they had Ayako Mori, and she worked on the first Ghosts and Goblins game, Makai Mura. And she was replaced, I'm not sure how or why exactly, because she carried on working for... She probably would have left Capcom. So Tomoyo Kawamoto took over for Dai Makai Mura, which is translates as Demon World Village for Ghouls and Ghosts, and wrote some of the most fantastically atmospheric level tunes, including this one, The Village of Decay and Destruction, which has a kind of ska feel to it. And then Tim Follin, being Tim Follin, runs off with it in that sort of folk prog rock direction. Now, this version that you hear may be the Amiga Extreme Stereo version, or it may be a monoized version, or it may be, if Jay can find one, an MP3 that is somewhere between the two. But either way, don't worry too much about the sound. Just enjoy the tune itself and its interweaving complexities and pure, rich atmosphere. Thank you. Ghouls and Ghosts. I do love that game, though I have never finished it because it is very hard. But not as hard as finishing Super Ghouls and Ghosts properly. One of the challenges. It's the challenge I like to set to people who say that they're good at hard games because they've finished Dark Souls or something. I say, go and finish Super Ghouls and Ghosts properly, and then you've actually finished a hard game instead of thinking you have. That's my retro snobbery, probably. Anyway, over to another contributor, and this is a tune that has been requested several times. And again, it's another tune with many, many versions, but our contributor, Ash, specifically wants the PC CD-ROM version from 1990. He says, one of the reasons I love The Secret of Monkey Island is the incredible sense of place the game evoked with its lovingly crafted pixel postcard environments. Primitive it may have been, but the wizards at Lucasfilm Games made every screen somewhere you'd be happy to spend hours in as you searched around for those elusive puzzle solutions. The music, of course, cemented this sense of place, and every time I hear the main theme, my mind is whisked back to the beauty of the Tri-Island area once again. My name's Guybrush Threepwood, and I want to be a pirate. Yeah, I absolutely love that every time I hear it. You can listen to that tune in so many ways. There was a version which obviously if you just played on a PC in 1990 that didn't have a sound card in, it would beep the music out of the internal speaker. That's not quite as enjoyable overall, but remarkable in its own way. So that was the version that was on the PC CD. But obviously since then it was converted to the Amiga and the legendary Chris Hulsbeck did the job and it sounds quite different. It's been used in with various sort of tweaks and stuff from Michael Land's original version. There's the special edition version, which carries the main melody on a flute, whereas I think people imagined it originally was on a sort of steel drum type setup. But whatever flavor it is, that is one of the great theme tunes, I think, from video gaming. Now, something slightly less well known. Back to Tony.
Yes, this... Well, the... the well. So the track I'm going to talk about is a track called In Belief by Chikayo Fukuda.
I think, something like that. Apologies to our Japanese community, but along those lines, she another female Japanese composer, of which there are
many. I'm not familiar with her work. She seems to be primarily a composer on the Dot Hack series.
Correct,
games.
Yeah.
Never played them. I know of them.
There's a lot.
There's a lot, having done some research on them.
So they've got a really, as with these things, like Shimigami Tensei, they've got a kind of very
hardcore, devoted
following. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, there was some on the PS2. I'm not sure recently, but yes, they definitely have a following. Josh, have you ever Dot Hacked?
No, but I know Jerome McIntosh from the Game Burst podcast is a fan of this series.
But that's not from that game, as I've never played it. The game that it is from is Asura's Wrath. I would love to try to explain to people what Asura's Wrath is about, but it's pretty hard to do so. I'll leave it as this. There's a you play a very angry deity who wishes to kill 7 other deities, primarily for the fact that they killed his wife and have kidnapped his daughter. The game is extremely violent. I would almost class it as a Walking Dead-esque type game. There's a lot of less conversation trees, but certainly more, what do you call them? QTEs,
quick time events QTEs.
But there is some actual combat in there in between stuff. But it's a game of a very big story and very violent, cutscenes interlaced between that story. Yet this track really stood out to me. It's there's two varieties of this track. It's pretty much the main theme of the game, and it plays in one or two different places right at the very end. There's a few sections in the middle, and there's also one at the very start. There's a vocal version of this track and an instrumental version of this track. Both are equally fantastic. I've gone with the vocal version just because I think it just adds that a little bit more, spice in it. And I have a feeling Chikoto may be the one that sings it.
Oh, I don't know.
It's doing some research. I think it says she may be the singer, so I can't.
The vocalist.
I can't 100% confirm that, but I think she may be. To the track itself, this is from 2012. It's a really beautiful track. It's very soft. If you've played the game, you'll understand what I mean. It's very much energized. Lots going on. There's this burst motion where you have to hit the button 50,000 times to get an action to happen on the screen. It happens loads and loads of time. Yet this track is a lot slower. It talks about Asura trying to control his rage with inside. It's just beautifully put together. It once again quite orchestral in a sense. Just really sits at odds with the game, but it's perfectly fits at the same time. So really hard to describe the game, but I think the track itself is utterly beautiful, and it's one that I thought the game was really interesting and really fun to play. I know some people have a different perspective on it. It's one of those kind of you like it or hate it type games. And I just listen to the track, and I think to me it brings a little tear to my eye. So hope you enjoy.
Thank you.
in belief, or indeed, depending on the translation, in your belief. So there's some confusion about this track, because I'm just looking back at our own podcast for Asura's Wrath, issue 53. Do check it out, with spoilers, of course. Mm-hmm. We've on our music list for that show, we've actually we've credited two of the tracks to Chikayo Fukuda, but we've actually credited the In Your Belief prologue version, which is the instrumental version of that, which you've just heard the
vocalized
version of. We've got it credited to one Karu Wada. So I don't know if that's accurate, but actually I did find a video of Chikayo Fukuda playing that theme in the Cyber Connect 2 studio, so I think it must be hers. So I may have made a mistake back then on the original credits, but what I have found out is that the vocal is by one Tomoyo Mitani,
okay,
according to this anyway. But apologies if we've got any of that wrong. It can be very annoyingly and surprisingly difficult to find out every detail of game music tracks, because so many places just will credit like 18 composers and it will just say music by these 18 composers or whatever.
It's also harder as well. Once you end up, you know, going to Eastern type tracks as well, you've end up coming across websites which are completely, you know, in Japanese, of course, and it makes it very hard to
it's a challenge to break it down.
Either way, I hope you think it's a really, really quite beautiful track.
Definitely worth sharing, even if we even if we haven't got all the details quite right. Absolutely, and yes, do check out that that issue of Kane and Rince number 53. Wow. Now we've already celebrated the recent re-release of The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask once, but heck, let's do it again, Josh.
So the 3DS version of The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask is the first time I've experienced this game, and there have been several moments that have really stood out to me. The actual end of the world, the final hours, the moon coming down, crashing down, is a oddly beautiful moment, despite it being so horrible and destructive. It's haunting, and I found the music here is kind of key to it, because while all this chaos is going on around you, the earth is shaking under your feet. The moon is getting ever and ever closer. You can see it moving at this point. Like the days before, it's not quite as noticeable, but in those final hours before the end of the world, it becomes really obvious how quickly this big sphere is coming towards you and is coming to destroy everything. And then the music, which takes a completely different direction to the rest of the soundtrack. The rest of the soundtrack is much of what you'd expect from the Zelda series. It's this orchestral, fantasy inspired. You know, the music that we've come to expect from stuff like Lord of the Rings. You know, all of that fantasy stuff, like very majestic and beautiful and what have you. Whereas this track, The Last End by Koji Kondo, the legendary Koji Kondo, it feels more like an 80s synth track, and it really brings to mind stuff like Blade Runner. It's not quite the same as that, but it really brings to mind that kind of very cynical, kind of haunting view of the world. And it lends the apocalypse this sense of sorrow and inevitability, and this kind of, as you're playing the game, as you're witnessing this moment, you can't help but think about all the people in Clock Town and all the citizens of the, you know, the Goron village and the Zoras and stuff. You are suddenly struck by the weight of what's going on. And the apocalypse is used as a plot device in any number of games. There's so many video games, but very few manage to sell you on the fact that everything is coming to an end. And Majora's Mask, not only in terms of the way it uses visuals and just the clock and everything, but the sound design and the music here is key to selling you on the belief that everything is going to end. Because unlike so many games that deal with this kind of subject matter, it doesn't go for the big, epic, orchestral kind of majestic music. It's sad. It's contemplative and it's melancholic. It's a beautiful piece of music. I'm not entirely sure how well it works on its own. When I listen to it, I am brought back to that moment, and that's why I love listening to it, because it really reminds me of that moment. So while you're listening to this, try and picture yourself as Link in the middle of Terminator Fields and witnessing the entire landscape shaking under your feet, and this scary moon coming towards you. Because although I think it may not work as a piece of music on its own, it is so effective in the context of the video game Majora's Mask. It's a beautiful piece of music. I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, there are so many tracks from that game that I like. We've already featured, at my request, the title theme, which is, you know, again, atypically
iconic.
Yeah, and it's terrifying for a Zelda game.
Yeah,
and yeah, I mean, like you say, there are some familiar themes, of course, and the overworld theme. But even the overworld theme in Majora's Mask is tinged with a slightly off key, sort of minor key thing going on. It's not as
it's not as
bombastic as usual, is it? It all feels a little smaller and a little more dangerous.
All the tracks in Ocarina of Time feel uplifting and optimistic and positive, everything in Majora's Mask feels sad and lonely and desperate.
Yeah, I've always believed that the game was fueled by millennial angst, you know, as it was being made from 98 to 2000. And
strangely, it suffered for many years. I think a lot of people misunderstood when the game came out what it was trying to go for. I think now there's a bigger appreciation for what, as a Zelda title, it was trying to do something slightly different.
It's done very well, I think, on re-release on 3DS, both critically and commercially. So
finds its audience 15 years down the line.
It wasn't my intention to sandwich Nintendo up against Nintendo, but we're dealing with such a change in tone, a shift in mood here, that I think it's okay. A different composer as well. Obviously, Koji Kondo was responsible for some of the great Mario tunes, but most of the duties were handed over to Mahito Yokota for Super Mario Galaxy. As I've often said, one of my very favourite video games of all time, and probably is at least something to do with the soundtrack, which I just think is just mind-blowing. I don't know about you chaps, but even going back to like Super Mario 64, when you first play some new levels of a new Mario and you hear a new tune, even if it's by Koji Kondo, and even if it, you know, this is an official Mario game, there's always that little bit where you're like, well, this isn't a Mario tune, because you're not used to it yet.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do get that.
Well, it's only because the main theme is so iconic in every single way that you almost want every theme around it to have some sort of element of that interlaced.
But then actually... Yeah, and then sometimes, you know, when you play one of the more recent ones like 3D World and it uses some of the old tunes, I get mixed feelings now. I get oh, brilliant, you know, nostalgia, and, you know, some of those tunes are just amazing. They were amazing in 1980 whenever, and they're amazing now. But other times you think, oh, you know, could have had a new tune there instead of that one that you've used eight times in different games. But this one that I want to share was one that I liked immediately, as with lots of the Super Mario Galaxy music, but I didn't necessarily think it sounded very Mario. But I suppose that's true for quite a lot of the Mario Galaxy music in a way. But I think this piece, the Honey Hive, which accompanies Honey Hive Galaxy and a few other bits, I think, it doesn't sound really like anything else. And even though it's in some ways absurdly jolly with its jaunty little plucked guitars and xylophones, and even then it still manages to have a slightly weird, in the way that Nintendo does these things, it has a slightly weird undertone that makes you feel that it's not completely like children's TV show, happy, happy, smiley, smiley. There's just a slight element of menace about it or something. You may listen to this and think that's ridiculous, but it comes for me in the, I mean, it's only a couple of minutes long, but it comes for me in the sort of middle section where you get these sort of plucked strings and stuff, and it just goes slightly off kilter. But overall, basically, it's been stuck in my head for the last few days, so I had to bring it to this podcast. It's the Honey Hive. Thank you. very much. And it's still in my head. And it's going to remain in my head. I'm not sure as much I can do about it.
And now it's in other people's heads. Well done.
Yeah, that's the plan. That's the plan. So we're going to play you out with another community request. Before then, we'll say, as you've heard, it's not just about what we like, us Cane and Rinse folks, or indeed our guests. So please do continue to venture over to our forum at caneandrinse.com/forum. I mean, do that anyway, because we have a lovely community of people who just want to talk games and not shout at each other and generally have a good time and be civil and very passionate about their love for the medium. But you can also, if you find the Sound of Play thread, request your own favorite songs, your favorite tunes and pieces from video games, as long as they're not licensed tracks that have been appropriated purely for from an original track to a game. And also just feel free to alert us to interesting tracks. It doesn't necessarily have to be your just the ones that you love the most, but ones that you think are interesting and you'd like to share for whatever reason. And of course, we will continue to include a selection of these in every single Sound of Play from now on. So our final request for this one is from Sonic Adventure 2 Battle, if you're talking about the GameCube version. And Telepri, our contributor, says that SA2 Battle on the GameCube was one of the first games that he really fell in love with. He says, me and my friends would play it for hours, especially the Chao Garden. Anyway, there are three tracks that have stuck me with the years playing it, but this first one is from the first level, where Sonic is trying to escape from the city. It's called City Escape. The song is so upbeat and fast that it just fits the game perfectly. So before we leave you with Jun Senue's City Escape, I think this is one that will divide the audience, so we've put it at the end. this is from originally from the Dreamcast, of course, back in 2001. It just remains for me, Leon, to thank Josh and Tony, and as always, our community contributors, and we'll leave you with Sonic being rad and cool and playing some guitars and that. And goodbye.